bring in Neil Coulong, our version of the Sultan of SWAT. Sir, first of all, Happy New Year. It's great to start 2022 knowing that you're there.
Yeah, it's as always great to be here. Happy New Year to you guys as well.
So let's get to Ben, who's played his last game in Heinz Field. I said earlier that one of the important factors that, number one, the Steelers never had a losing season with him there to start with. And then when you look at the run of the Patriots, the run of the Packers, and the run of the Steelers, which bucks how the NFL's supposed to work. You're supposed to, be lousy, get high draft picks, and then take advantage like the Eagles have of last place schedules. The Steelers, Packers, and Patriots have bucked the trend because of Brady, Rodgers, and Ben.
Yeah, it's tough to disagree with that, mostly because when you have that piece to build around, it makes all the other decisions that much easier. You don't have to worry. Even not to say you don't have to worry, but your offensive scheme is kind of set. I mean, when you have Aaron Rodgers, you know the things Aaron Rodgers can do. You're drawing up your offense based on his skill point. And with that, you're drafting guys to come in and complement that. That's making you a more consistent team. It makes your coaching staff not bulletproof exactly, but you're going to get a lot more continuity out of it. Keep in mind, look at Ben's career. I mean, you started off with Ken Wisenhunt. From there, it was Arians, right? Arians didn't take over. There's somebody between those two, maybe.
Yeah.
I forget, but somebody in there, Arians, Todd Haley.
I've just spent the last 5 months around Ken Wisenhunt. He's been here.
No, good. Yeah. Ken's a great guy.
Smart football guy.
He is. He totally is. He's a great coach. Unfortunately, ran into some bad predicaments probably at the end. I think he could have had more in Tennessee, I think. But he had good, successful offensive coordinators around him, and they were in place for a while. Believe me, we don't need to get into the quality of offensive play calling or anything like that. But the bottom line is when you have that continuity of coaching, not just at the coordinator level, but the position level as well, there's so much more that you're able to implement. And that is a hurdle that you as a franchise don't have to overcome every year. Whereas look at what Sean McDermott, for example, in Buffalo is doing. Sean McDermott is, a godsend to that team that had to strip everything down to the studs and rebuild once every 3 years for three decades. When you don't have that continuity, when you don't have those pieces in place, you're constantly starting off almost like you're an expansion team. And it's not easy to win like that. So while I think there's a lot of consternation over the value of a team not having fallen below 500, to me it's more what the combination of Ben Roethlisberger with Bill Cowher as well as with Mike Tomlin, you had a great pairing of the two top figures of your team. And with that, you raise your basement. Maybe not so much raise your ceiling, but it's hard for those teams to really fall apart and to fall down to that 4-12 range without a slew of injuries,
right?
Which is, you look at John Harbaugh, for example. I think that the combination that they had going for them for a while could have been on the same level, maybe one injury more than they were able to take on some of those years. But they haven't fallen past that level either. And Belichick, I think, did it for the first time in 20 years last year. And he lost his quarterback. So when you have to start over, you're starting over at the back of the line in the NFL. That's the bottom end of the parity polls, So with that, with Ben being consistent, not 16-game healthy, but relatively healthy with the exception of 1 year throughout his career, and it was a miracle that they pulled out 8-8 from that season. But you put all those things together, you can see the value of that being worth maybe three up to four wins a year just because of that. And a lot of it is going to be because you end up playing those back end teams that are starting over and having to rebuild and don't have that consistency in place. So you're able to kind of take advantage of an even schedule top to bottom. You win eight, you lose eight. That's kind of what they did a couple times. So it's not the greatest thing, but it does speak to an organization that is going to be at work average because of what they've set up year in and year out.
All right, so Last night's game was interesting because Najee Harris had a really big night. He averaged like 6 yards a carry. I think Ben only averaged like 3.3 yards per attempt, something like that last night. Because Harris has been 3.7 yards per carry for the year, which is 0.2 behind the career average of Jerome Bettis. So, I mean, Pittsburgh fans love 3.9 yards a carry. It's kind of like the standard, right?
That's what they love. But bad news for you, Ben, was 2.7 last night, which
I've never seen that before.
Not at 4 pass attempts, that's for sure. For years, I got all kinds of run out of this stat. There was a game Joe Flacco played. He was 30 for 50 for like 140 yards.
Yeah.
He was like 3.4. That is just, I don't know what that is, but it's just ridiculous. I was laughing for most of the game last night. It was so bad. The Steelers to have won that game, it only goes to show how bad it looked for the Browns, probably more than anything. Harris busted a few plays. I think their offensive line did a great job in the run game. Maybe the only time this season we can say that. They played the game really well in that area. Their passing game was miserable. I mean, it was just flat out awful. And what a time for it as well, you know. But at the same time, the Steelers dominated that game. It was never a question. It never felt like Cleveland was ever going to get back into it. They were down 5. They were down 7. It just never felt like Cleveland had anything. I mean, I don't know what they were doing offensively, but what a train wreck of a game for them.
And
only that could have washed out a historically miserable performance from the Steelers passing attack in particular. They got after it in the ground game. That was good, but it's not like that became an emphasis. They were up by a bunch late. That's when they really started running the ball. They threw a lot. They just ran a lot of plays.
Yeah.
That's how bad Cleveland was.
Yeah, and Cleveland, to their credit, was bad last night. But now, with, what did you say, 8,000-9,000 different scenarios, they can make the playoffs.
Yeah, only a 17-game season with 7 seeds in each conference making the playoffs would the Steelers have a chance at this. But at the same time, you know, what's interesting, getting back to the 500 level, the 8-8 level, the Steelers never made the playoffs all the years that they were 8-8. One year they came very, very close. They hit on, I think, 4 of the tiebreaker scenarios that they needed. They needed one more. That was 2013 when the Chargers beat the Chiefs backups in overtime.
Right.
If the Chiefs had won that game, the Steelers would have gone on to the playoffs. Every other year they were eliminated, I think, heading into the final week of the season. So for them to be in this spot now, and while I don't think there's a whole lot of people that really feel good about taking the money line with the Jaguars in this game, the Jaguars have beaten the Colts in Jacksonville often enough lately to a point where it's like, you know, maybe. I mean, it's not impossible. At some point, the interim coach tends to have a really good game. You know,
yeah.
You get people's attention. When the head coach was fired, you have no job security. Ask Joe Schobert last year what happened. You know, the guy that signed you the contract, the coach that believed in you enough to want to sign you that contract is gone. What's going to happen to you? You're going to be gone if you don't play. So
right.
The Jaguars players, once again, are in the same spot, and you'd think that they'd respond to that eventually. Colts are a well-coached team, though. I mean, it's a tough scenario, and I don't even know if that's the tougher scenario, going to Baltimore and winning a game that's being played purely for pride. Baltimore's not an easy team to beat. I know that they've been really up and down and kind of streaky in a lot of ways, but that's a quality football team. Pittsburgh's not going to be able to just show up and win that. So we'll see how it happens, how it turns out. But, I don't think the odds are that bad against it happening. I don't see it happening, though. I wouldn't bet on it. Baltimore's a tough team to beat. More than anything, I think that they're going to lose. I would take Baltimore in that tight game, but I think Baltimore's finally going to beat the bad Steelers teams that they can't seem to beat anymore.
You know what, Neil? Normally, I would sit back and go, yeah, this can't happen. There's been too many odd twists and turns in this season. I feel like there's still craziness left this weekend.
a good point. I mean, I said this on my podcast last week leading into the Cleveland game. There's not a shred of empirical evidence I can point to suggest that Pittsburgh's going to win this game, but I'm going to pick them to win just because there's just something about this that doesn't seem right. And Cleveland goes out and throws the ball all over the field for some reason. You've got an all-pro running back. You want to do the things that you're good at doing. And when that happens to be something the other team can't stop, it really should be a sign that that's what you should do. But Kevin Stefanski's living in another analytical world, I guess, than the rest of us
are. Yeah,
I know. And it happened because of that, to be honest with you. Here's my thing. If Nick Chubb, who I think most would agree at the very least is a top two player at his position in the league, mm-hmm. if Nick Chubb is injured, why are you even giving him 12 carries?
Right.
You give that guy 25 or you give him zero. You know, right. if he's injured, don't play him at all. You have nothing to play for in this game. Playing him 12 snaps and then having your very injured quarterback,
who doesn't
have a long-term contract right now, execute, you know, right side rollouts, leading with his bad shoulder and putting a parking cone off your offensive right edge to block the defensive player of the year.
That's not good.
I don't know what you're doing, but you're not going to win. I mean, is that the plan? I mean, I don't get it. I have respect for Kevin Stefanski. He's somebody who came up through the Vikings organization. That's a place I know people at.
Mm-hmm.
They all speak the world of him. Everything we've seen to this point is he's a good coach. I have no idea what the thought process was the last 2 weeks for them, but top to bottom, they did not play well yesterday, and it really kind of seemed to me like they tied one arm behind their back for some reason and just decided to go out and you know, not really give it their all. I don't understand it. It looked to me, I joked about this on Twitter, it looked to me like the lifeless type of Browns team that found out before the game that their head coach got fired.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which one, because we're like six of those games, but this is what it looks like.
And moving forward for Cleveland, it would be dumb to remove him. I would figure out a way to keep Mayfield. The reason is, who are you going to get that's better? I mean, the one thing the Browns, since the Browns came back in 1999, they have made so many changes that they have set themselves back repeatedly, in part because of some of the changes they made. Sometimes you've got to keep the course when the world is telling you to change, and you look around and go, really, I know my business better than you. Let me just do it. The Browns need to take that approach.
Yep, I think season obviously didn't work out the way that they wanted to. I would say this, though. They got off to a good start. They had some injuries, and things kind of rolled downhill from there. Whoever it was, I still haven't even bothered to look up the poor guy's name, but whoever it was that they had at right tackle last night is not ready to be playing.
No.
You know, we said the same thing about Dan Moore after Miles Garrett handed mm-hmm. him his hat in the first game. Last night was equally as bad, and for the same reasons. He's a young kid. He probably shouldn't be out there. They lost both their tackles at various points throughout the year. Their protection was really bad, and that was the main component of their offense. They've spent to that. They've drafted to that. They didn't get it. And along with that, I know it's the fun, cool thing to rip Baker Mayfield, but he's not even close to healthy.
No.
If you've passed a football in a competitive environment, you think that you don't need your lead arm to throw accurately, to throw with velocity, you're sorely mistaken. I mean, you have to be able to do that. He's not right. In my opinion, he should have gone out weeks ago. If they wanted to salvage their season, he should have gone on IR. He should have had surgery. I mean, you know, he shouldn't have played. Case Keenum should have been the guy that they played.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that's tied up in the contract issue that they're facing. How exactly do you value Mayfield at this point? And I think to some degree, Mayfield didn't want to be seen as, I'm ducking out on my team. I want to play through it. I don't know where the Browns would have stood with all of that. But what I know is he was not right. He didn't look good in either game he played against Pittsburgh. And he was terrible against Green Bay last week. I mean, he's played really poorly most of the second half of the season. And the Browns' fate has gone with that. So to me, it's something went wrong in their decision-making process. And I think Stefanski spoke to that a little bit today. He said it was a fair question to ask, should he have been playing? but they made a decision week to week based on the information that they had.
Right.
That, to me, suggests more pain tolerance than anything else.
Right.
And for me, somebody in decision-making power should have said, look, we'll make you whole. We're going to come to terms on an agreement. That's a promise. You can't play, though. Objectively speaking, you don't look very good. I appreciate the toughness. It's not an indication of that at all, but you can't play. You're not going to help the team. My opinion, they lost their season based on that more than anything else.
I know this is out of the realm of Steelers and Ravens, but Joe Burrow, I made the point a year ago when he got hurt against Washington. I said, this guy is so good. He gave the Bengals a puncher's chance in every single game. Now, there is no quarterback that was drafted this past year, nor is there a quarterback going to be drafted this year coming up that is going to give their team a puncher's chance at winning. None of them. I don't care, Trevor Lawrence or any kid that's coming up. Kenny Pickett? No. Not going to give you a puncher's chance. This kid does. Hey, when you say, and I thought the Chase pick was an awesome pick because it just told me they're trying to go for it offensively and get points. When you see him play, what are you seeing right now from him?
What I see in a lot of ways, and this is mostly really, really good for the Bengals and a little bit maybe bad to a degree, he reminds me so much of Aaron Rodgers, it's scary. Whatever the injury did to him in terms of his mobility, he's over that. He's got enough mobility to extend, to make plays happen. You and I might have been the only people that were really strongly endorsing the idea of them drafting Ja'Marr Chase.
I know.
As far as,
yes.
I didn't want the Bengals to draft him, but I definitely thought they should have drafted him.
And you and I had the same reasons, because I know because Penny Sewell was there, got to protect him. And you and I had said the way the game is played today, you got to get the game breaker to go with the quarterback. Right? And
you'll fix protection.
Yep.
it's a mandate, and you're paying an entire group a lot of money to provide protection. You want good players, no doubt, but one player does not fix protection. I'll tell you what does, though. Ja'Marr Chase.
Yep.
And look at his season. I hate to say I told you so, but there was no doubt in my mind he was going to be the offensive rookie of the year. He's going to be an all-pro player for most of his career. He is as good a young receiver as I've ever seen. And to me, it was an absolute no-brainer. I don't think he should have even gone five. If you want production, get this guy the ball. I mean, he's that good. Yep. And on top of that, your franchise quarterback and the most important citizen in the state of Ohio is used to playing with him.
Yep.
I mean, you got a gift 2 years in a row. You flat out got gifted this. And I hate the fact that it happened because it's the Bengals. But
I know.
Burrow, to me, is... here was the big thing, and I'm sure I'll be asked the same question again this coming offseason. Who's the best quarterback in the AFC North? I said Joe Burrow. Everyone else was like, well, Lamar's got the MVP. I don't care.
Right.
It's Joe Burrow. You can't, from a football perspective, you absolutely cannot argue with that. This kid can do anything on the field, and we've seen it. That Chiefs game, he was lights out. He was absolutely unreal. Put together a two-game stretch when his team needed him to. That is all stuff. I mean, he's phenomenal. I do think he's got that constant level of intensity, that chip on his shoulder, that might not go over well when he's really established and perhaps they have a little bit of a down year. Burrow strikes me as a great leader. I wonder what's going to happen when things are maybe a little bit more negative, The way that they went out of their way to royally celebrate a second win over the Steelers kind of struck me as that's not, that's the young kid thing to do. That's not what the leader should
do.
Right, right. I think he grows out of that, though. And you're seeing a player like Rodgers who, when he's dialed in, he's unstoppable. You won't beat him. There are a lot of other things that you need to do to beat the Packers because of Aaron Rodgers. And because of that, they can have a mediocre team and still win 11 games. They've done it a couple times. Cincinnati is in the position to be able to do that. And they have a defense that is right on the verge. We've seen them go up and down this season. I had said all week, the biggest claim that the Bengals can make right now is that they beat the tar out of the Steelers and the Ravens twice each.
Yeah.
Beyond that, they're a 500 team.
Right.
They didn't beat good teams. They lost to bad teams. I thought Kansas City was going to put them in a hurt locker, and they were for a chunk of the game. Burrow brought them back. Chase brought them back.
Yeah.
These kids are under 24. I mean, they got 5 years of great run, maybe longer, coming from that group. And to me, while I watch Trevor Lawrence, and I think that very few people were put on earth to be the same kind of player that he is.
Right.
I would agree with you. Chips on the table. What we're looking at between those two is the early days of Manning versus Brady.
Yeah.
When Manning had the pedigree, he had absolutely everything, and Brady just kept kicking his butt because he's Tom Brady, and he's the consummate team leader. He's gutsy. He does everything you need to, and on top of that, he's really talented. I think Lawrence, you don't see a whole lot of kind of the stereotypical cliche types of leadership that Burrow, I think, does. Not a real fiery guy, not overly emotional, but he is just hellaciously talented. And the things that he is able to do on a field, when they get a sense of normalcy and they put an adult in charge and they bring in actual football talent, he's gonna explode.
No
I don't
doubt.
Think it's far for Lawrence.
I agree.
I agree on absolutely everything else. It's not even close. I don't think there's been a Burrow or a Lawrence, with the exception of Andrew Luck, in a very long time.
Right, exactly.
Between the two of them, they are as good a quarterback prospects you're ever going to see. Add Josh Allen in that mix, and you still have Patrick Mahomes. AFC is going to be tough to win for a long time. Between those four guys, when they get going, that's tough.
And there are none in this draft. And with all due respect,
not even close.
Not even close. There will be guys picked in the first round, but no, they're not difference makers. Well, happy New Year, my friend. We might as well just do this every Tuesday of 2022. What do you think?
It's start of the business season. You know, this is the part geeks like me really get into. I enjoy all the machinations of the NFL. So yeah, I'm happy to keep doing. Plenty to talk about.
Absolutely. Thanks, my friend.
Thank you. You guys have a good one.